Sinde Mulezani in Durban from the University of KwaZulu-Natal. I'll be chairing this session today. Not to waste any more time, I'm going to introduce the speaker. Her name is Kathleen Pithouse Morgan, and she's a senior lecturer in the School of Education and Development in the Faculty of Education at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. She has research interests in teacher development, self-study of practice, collaborative scholarship, memory studies, HIV and AIDS education, and creative, self-reflective, and participatory approaches in education and research. She is the lead editor of an interdisciplinary book on self-study titled Making Connections, Self-Study and Social Action, which she co-edited with Claudia Mitchell and myself, published by Peter Lang. She's also the co-editor of the following books, Teaching in HIV and AIDS with Claudia Mitchell, and Memory and Pedagogy with Mitchell, Strong, Wilson, and Olnack, which has just been published. She has worked at the HSRC as the first coordinator of the MacAIDS Leadership Initiative and is the co-investigator on the Transformative Educational Studies Project, about which she is going to be talking to us today. Kathleen, over to you.
Thanks, Sable. Good afternoon, everyone. I can't see you very clearly, so I don't know whether it's possible to change that on the screen, Moses, or...
Since we've linked four sides, we
can hear.
Sorry. Since we've linked four sides, we cannot send the slides to Durban and Cape Town. So I thought they gave you the hard copies.
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to use hard copies.
Okay, thank you, and welcome for coming. I think the slides are being projected in four different venues, is that right?
No.
You just have hard copies,
eh? Hard copies, yes, because we don't have enough bandwidth there, Kathleen.
Okay, we'll sure. Work with that then.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to start with a short warm-up activity. If you could have a look at slide two, please. It would have been nice to see it in colour, but black and white will prevent it. Okay, so this activity is called Do You Know Who These Superheroes Are? Who are they and what are their special powers? We go to slide three. Have a look at the first one. Okay. And there's slide four. And then slide five. Okay. I'd like you please to take a moment to think about what special powers you could add in here for the supervisors, what powers you think they have or what powers you think they should have. But on a more serious note, I think when we look at the literature on supervision and we read the various policy documents that our institutions put out, when we take account of the roles and responsibilities that supervisors are meant to have, I think that we would be not far wrong in thinking that they would have to have superpowers in order to meet the expectations that are placed on them. However, in the absence of such superpowers, what 12 supervisors do have is participation in the Transformative Educational Studies Project. And that's what we're going to focus on today. If you can move to slide 7, please. Okay, so the Transformative Educational Studies Project, or TES, as we affectionately call it, is both a research project and an educational intervention. and it's led by researchers from, oh good, I can see you now, the Durban University of Technology, the lead researcher being Professor Joan Connolly, who's on my left here, and then there are also researchers from Walter Sisulu University, our lead researcher there being Professor Tenjiwe Mayiwa, who unfortunately couldn't join us today, and then we also have researchers from the University of KwaZulu-Natal. The participants are 22 staff students at these three universities who are both students but staff members as well who are studying their own practice of higher education. And we also have 12 supervisors. And the project is generously funded by the NRF, for which we are very grateful. And together these staff students, as we call them, and supervisors form the TES community. It's interdisciplinary, and we have people representing a wide range of disciplines, from jewellery design to maths education to communication and drama education. So a real range of students and supervisors. If you could go to slide 8, please. So through TES, we are aiming to both enhance and study the development of pedagogic research and supervision capacity amongst staff at our three universities, and our focus particularly on developing self-reflexive capacities, which we'll talk more about later. What we aim to do is to develop a collaborative inquiry community, and also, we are focusing on a shared research methodology, which is self-study of practice. Although we have this triple focus on pedagogy, supervision, and research, today I'm particularly going to focus on the supervision aspect of the project. Slide 9, please. Okay, so why would we focus on supervision? Sounds like there's some strange feedback.
Yeah, can we mute our microphones in all offices except Devon?
I think supervision is a really, really key aspect to focus on, and research supports that, indicates that there are a number of areas for educational research and development in South Africa and beyond in which supervision should be paid very careful attention to. The statistics show us that only 30% of permanent staff at universities in South Africa have doctoral degrees and so are eligible to supervise at the doctoral and sometimes master's level. We also have quite a few inexperienced supervisors, and research suggests that they're not receiving the right kind of support to assist them with supervision. Also, the old model of one supervisor working closely with one student doesn't seem to necessarily be working very well anymore. But I think what's also really important for us in the TES project is a shared understanding that all supervisors, no matter how experienced, actually need to be lifelong learners in order to keep up with changes in methodology and technology and in various research areas. In our group of 12 supervisors, we have very experienced supervisors who are, however, new to the self-study methodology. And then we have novice supervisors who have PhDs in self-study. So it's, in a way, we're all novices in one way or another. I think a really important factor that brings us together in the TES community is a focus on self-study of practice, and we share an understanding that if we're going to supervise staff members who are studying their own practice, then we need to practice what we preach as supervisors, and we also need to pay attention to the question, theorize, transform, and go public with our own practice of educational supervision. Slide 12, please. A third factor that brings us together as the TES supervisors is a belief in the value of the a wealth of research and also our own experience tells us that when we collaborate as scholars, it can lead to enhanced academic productivity, which our bosses would be pleased to hear, enhanced quality, and I think most importantly for us, actually helps us to really enjoy what we do. Slide 13, please. So how are we actually working to build this collaborative community? So far, this project only started this year. So far this year, we've had two workshops, which involve participants from our three different institutions and sometimes beyond as well. The first workshop was a three-day workshop. The one that's actually happening next week is a five-day workshop. They've each been led by international experts on self-study, the one being Claudia Mitchell from McGill University, and also Professor Jack Whitehead from the University of Liverpool Hope University. And at each of these workshops, we've had a dedicated supervisor's day where we can discuss and share issues that are relevant particularly to supervisors. We also have at our three different institutions ongoing support meetings with the supervisors and sometimes students at those institutions. And in addition, we have various kinds of online support. We have two online classrooms, one for all staff, one which is just institution specific. And we also try to encourage all our participants to contribute to various listservs, international listservs that are relevant to what we're doing. In addition, we send out regular emails, and we also have what we call digital logbooks, which is where participants are encouraged to email us in response to some brief prompts that we send out so that we can sort of assess how people are doing, what kinds of support they're receiving from the project, what other kinds of support they would like to receive. We have a lot of plans for the future. We want to carry on with our workshops, our support meetings. We also would like to have a public conference towards the end of the three-year project, and various kinds of publications, probably including an edited book. So there's lots in store. Slide 14, please. So in terms of how our supervision support has been received by our participants, I think a key finding so far is that participation in our community is really enhancing the work of both novice and experienced supervisors in a number of ways. Supervisors report feeling stimulated and really enjoying the interaction with colleagues at their own universities and across the three institutions. They also report that they're gaining in confidence, and that's again both novice and expert supervisors. They also explain that they are clarifying their thinking around supervision issues through these discussions, through these meetings, and it's thinking about supervision generally and also thinking about supervision of self-study research projects. Slide 15, please. And I think also very significantly, the supervisors report that they feel supported and less isolated through their interaction with their colleagues. And this is an issue that often comes up when we're talking about, for example, education for PhD researchers, is how they can feel isolated, and it's important to involve them in a community so that they don't experience that isolation. I think what's come out interestingly from our project is that supervisors can also feel isolated, and the physical meetings that we've had and also the online support and interaction has really helped to alleviate those feelings of isolation. Slide 16, please. But of course, as well as the good things, we experience some challenges. One of the challenges is, as I mentioned earlier, that only about one-third of permanent academic staff at universities in South Africa hold doctoral qualifications. And because of that, the supervision load for those who do have those qualifications tends to be quite heavy. Amongst our group, we are supervising an average of 9 masters and or PhD students each, and that's not just the students from our project, but other students as well. And in addition to that, I think all of us are involved in some kind of mentoring of other staff members, other students who are not officially our students to supervise. And of course, we also have our own research and our various teaching responsibilities on top of that supervision. So what that means is, as much as we enjoy participation in the TEDS community activities, it's really hard sometimes to find enough time as we'd like to get involved and to contribute. Slide 17, please. So we do find that it's difficult sometimes to get people together to actually organize the meetings, attend the meetings, keep our own reading going so that we're keeping up to date with changes and developments in the self-study field. Making use of the online classrooms, posting information, that all takes time. Participating in listservs obviously takes time. And then, in addition to that, we're trying to really assist our students with academic reading and writing, offering them pastoral support. We would, I think all of us like to do more in all of those areas, but obviously time is limited. Slide 18, please. So in addition to the time challenges, we also face logistical challenges that I think are not specific to our group, that are common probably to academics at most universities in South Africa. The one is that some of the supervisors feel that their own technological skills are quite limited, and so they battle to access the electronic resources that are at their disposal to participate in online conversations and so on. And sort of compounding that is that in some universities the technological backup is quite limited. Network access is often poor, it's often not connected, and there are scarce electronic resources. For example, video conferencing, which might provide, in theory, would provide a good forum for us to meet inter-institutionally, the facilities are very limited. In addition, another factor, which I think, again, probably affects most academics, is that in our own universities, we are located on different campuses. And in some of those universities, the campuses are very far apart, up to 2 hours. So it means that when we want to meet even as supervisors in one institution, it can be very time consuming and very expensive to actually hold those meetings regularly. Slide 19, please. And of course, in addition to those quite common challenges that I think most supervisors in South Africa face, we as supervisors of projects have identified some particular methodological challenges. One being that because this is a fairly new methodology, particularly in South Africa, we have to work very hard to convince our colleagues and to build the confidence of our students so that they're able to defend what they do and feel confident and able to explain what it is they do to people who often have a limited understanding of that. The other issue is that because we are working in an interdisciplinary team, we are often supervising students from a range of disciplines. And although we might be experts in the educational aspects or the self-study aspects, we're having to get on top of business studies, jewelry design, drama education, maths education. So that's quite a challenge. And back to slide 20, please. However, despite those various challenges that I have identified, we are the supervisors. We're a super team working together, 12 of us. And slide 21, please. I think what is clear and what's come out so far from the TEDS project is working together, in spite of these challenges, is providing us with a very necessary support that wasn't there before. And because of that, despite the challenges, we are going to keep working together. One of the responses that has come through very strongly is just keep the supervision support going. Whatever happens, whatever the challenges are, keep it going. And certainly that's what we're going to do. And obviously, in order to do that, we'll try and source more funding, network more widely, which is what we're doing today, publish, which is always very important. Maybe try and find some more time. For that, we might need superpowers. But I think, again, coming back to probably what's most important is that we're going to carry on enjoying what we do, because I think that taking joy in your work, something that's often overlooked, can seem frivolous, but in fact is probably key to really managing those multiple challenges that we face. And if we go to the last slide, those are our contact details. Three co-investigators, Joan Connolly, lead investigator. I think we'd love to hear from you. We really want to extend what we do beyond our three universities and find ways of networking and working with supervisors and students across South Africa and beyond. Thank you.
So there we have it. I think I'll go straight into comments and questions from the various centers. I will start in Cape Town. You have a question or a comment, Cape Town?
It doesn't look like it at the moment.
Okay. I'll go, I think it's Port Elizabeth.
Yes, we have one.
Yes. Please tell us who you are.
Okay, my name is Denise Lynn. I'm in the Faculty of Education at NMMU. And my question is just, what are the kinds of, can you give us examples of the kinds of things that you discuss across these cyber spaces and airwaves? And what is the, you know, what is the nature of the kinds of conclusions and learnings that you may have as a result of those discussions?
Any other question from Port Elizabeth?
Not for now.
One more,
okay.
One of the things you spoke of earlier was aspects that the old model of supervisor-student does not work. In what sort of aspects do you actually see that is still not applicable now?
And please tell us who you are.
Oh, my name is Kumalele Gama. I'm in the Department of Botany.
Okay, I'll let Kathleen answer those two questions.
Thank you.
I think the first one, I might draw on my colleagues here who are involved in those discussions to maybe tell us some of the issues that they found helpful or interesting.
I'm Liz Harrison. In terms of the online classroom, what we call the test classroom, we're using Blackboard, and what we've been doing is using the journal tool to encourage people to actually write, students to actually write, and that enables all the supervisors who are online as designers to actually comment and encourage students in their writing, because that's possibly the hardest thing, I think, for particularly master's students to move into, is getting their ideas down on paper. So journaling is very important. So that and the informal kind of feedback that doesn't depend on marking, I think that's one of a good product. Sharing interpretations of things like photographs of practice and place is also quite an interesting project that we're currently doing across the classroom. It's in its infancy, but I think that there are a lot of things that you can do online that maybe allow for privacy and also for students opening ideas in an informal way that possibly don't happen in a face-to-face manner. And I think it's those affordances that we're actually experimenting with at the moment. So supervisors get to see what other supervisors say, but they also get to encourage students. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. If I could just comment, like, I kind of came late because I'm still trying to find my way, just 2 weeks old in Port Elizabeth. My name is Khadija Adif, I'm also with the Department of Education, and I'm kind of one of those fortunate people to have only graduated in 2005, so I'm still kind of a new graduate DF-wise. What I want to say about Blackboard, because I've used that system quite extensively in my previous place of employment, was that do students get a chance to see each other's work and to support each other via that Blackboard system also? Because one of the fundamental things that in my experience was good is when students sat together and supported each other through the various processes, not necessarily supervisor student, but student-student interactions. And you have a Blackboard system.
I think that's a perfect opportunity for Joan to talk about.
Thank you. I'm Joan Connolly from the Durban University of Technology, and I thank you for arranging today's exercise so that we can talk about self-study. I think what I'd like to say in response to your question, Denise, is that I have been so hugely gratified by the response of master's and doctoral students to the huge range of self-study types that there are, if I can call them types loosely, things like visual methodologies, participatory methodologies, action research, Gurwitz studies, living theories research, you know, the narrative inquiry. There's so many different ways in which we can engage with self-study, and I have watched in the support groups that I attend regularly, I have watched the enjoyment, the excitement, the pleasure that new novice, masters and doctoral students are gaining from engaging in all those different kinds of thinking which all are related to self-study. I'm also enjoying enormously watching the interaction, the live interaction at support group meetings on a regular Friday afternoon at DUT, to which meeting anybody and everybody is invited. They're not structured, they're not programmed, and folk just come. But I think what I enjoy most about this, what I think is most gratifying, is the way in which the students are interacting with each other and creating a circle of trusted but critical friends, so that they are not dependent entirely on their supervisors and their mentors, but that they interact and support each other. And that community of practice I'm finding incredibly gratifying and encouraging.
Yeah, the second question, I think that issue of the old model of supervision, it's something that comes out quite strongly in research internationally and is starting to come out here, is that supervisors now have a much bigger supervision workload than they used to. So if you have 9 students, the chances of finding time to sit down with each one individually very often is quite limited. So finding some way of doing group work can be very useful in that regard. But I think also there's an idea that it used to be that the supervisor would sort of exemplify what the student should be, and the student would somehow pick that up, maybe by osmosis. But there's an increased understanding now that supervision is a kind of teaching, of pedagogy, and that students are unlikely to pick things up by osmosis. So that idea that the apprentice would just learn by watching the master has become less favorable, perhaps, in current research. And I think in our group, we are interested in the pedagogy of supervision rather than the idea that students will just learn by watching us in action.
Pretoria, any questions from Pretoria?
Not now.
Yeah.
Okay, Evan, sorry? Pretoria? No.
Oh, there's one, Prof. We've got one question in Pretoria.
Hello, my name is Caroline Kuzika, Department of Music, University of Pretoria. It interests me to know to what extent you find it necessary to have expertise in a particular subject area as opposed to what is really largely editorial expertise. And I ask this because I have a very large number of postgraduate students, approximately 20. And I find that a great deal of my time is actually spent on dealing with problems with the students' writing skills and formulation abilities. I trained as an editor myself in order to be able to help better in that line. But it often feels to me as though my subject expertise is not nearly as much required as general experience and the fact that one assists students to get their own ideas clearly and logically formulated. And once they've done that, they can help themselves and they can help others to quite an extent. I had the same experience as you when I started a team research project in 2000, where I had 12 doctoral students and 8 master's students working with one co-supervisor on a project which I thought was really necessary to be done in the country, but which was far too big for one person to do. And so we had this whole team working together. And I must say, I found that was highly effective. If I looked at the number of graduates that we got through, what our university likes to refer to as throughput, when I look at our throughput from the team project as opposed to throughput from a whole range of different individual students that you're working with, I would say the throughput was much better. And yet I don't often see from institutions support for these kinds of team research projects. These are the issues that interest me, if somebody would like to comment on those. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no other question,
there's
another one from Pretoria.
I'm Hilaria Boerman from the University of South Africa. What we experience now is that there is large pressure on you to take students outside your field of expertise. And it was just at a meeting that I attended a few weeks ago that more and more of our pieces are rejected due to conceptual problems, and it was said that was because supervisors have to move out of their fields of expertise. They are just kind of pressure put on them to take students in fields that they are not really experts in. And how do you see, can such a group help that or assist with that?
Yeah. Okay, I'll let Kathleen answer those two.
Yeah, I think that the first question really about academic reading and writing, I think we all have that experience that a lot of our time is spent on pedagogy of academic reading and writing. And probably especially with our group, because our students are staff members who are experts in their own subjects, we don't actually necessarily need to be the expert on jewelry design, but we can help them with learning to find their academic or scholarly voice. And I think certainly in the feedback we've had from our students after our first couple of workshops, that's where they really are requesting assistance. Everybody says we need help with writing. We need help with writing, not just writing the thesis, but publishing. So those are areas in which I think next year in particular are going to really try and focus and work together. And I think international research shows that PhD students in particular who are supported in some kind of writing group, an ongoing writing group, do do much better in the end and find the process somewhat easier than those who are not. Which I think brings you to the second point about team support and throughput. I think, again, research shows very clearly that there are very positive links between scholarly collaboration, whether it's on the level of a research project and publication or with students working together, and through, I mean, it's very clear. It is unfortunate that our institutions often don't reward scholarly collaboration. You get less points for writing together, when in fact writing together often will, I mean, the research shows very clearly that it's, you're more likely to be published, and what you are publishing is probably going to be of a higher quality because you've already done that kind of team peer review process. So I think there's education to be done, let's say, in our institutions about the value of scholarly collaboration for staff members and for students as well. I think, and then the third question was about pressure to take students from areas outside of your expertise. I think we are all supervising students. I'm supervising students in business studies education, maths education, definitely not my areas of expertise, but they are experts, fortunately, so I don't necessarily feel that I need to bring that expertise. But working together in a supervisors group like that, like this, if I did need that expertise, fortunately there are colleagues I can call on. But I think that also brings us back to the point about this, the apprentice-master model, is that more and more people are working with models of co-supervision or even investigating the committee system of supervision, which they use extensively in the US and Canada, where you have people on the committee with different kinds of expertise who can guide the students in different ways. And that's not something I think we have any of our three universities yet, but formalized. Not formalized, but we are providing a kind of informal form of that. But I think that, you know, those, but again, that's not rewarded by our institutions because you get less points for co-supervision and less work hours or whatever it is. So again, I think we need to educate our institutions about the value of co-supervision or committee supervision and show them how, in fact, at the end of the day, it's more likely to result in the kind of throughput and high quality research that they're looking for.
Kathleen, do you mind if I come? Thank you, Kathleen. One thing I wanted to pick up, I think it was Marlene who a little while ago said in her research project of 20 students, she watched with pleasure to see how students learned to formulate their ideas in their own way and then were able to support others. Did I hear you correctly, Marlene?
The lady in red, was she Marlene?
No, Caroline.
Can I not be
Caroline? Caroline, beg your pardon. Sorry, Caroline. Did I hear you correctly when you said that?
Yes.
Okay. I'd just like to say that is also my experience from the support groups on a Friday afternoon, that one of the ways in which very, very nervous, very novice academic writers are helped to get into the writing is first to talk about it. I find that nervous and novice researchers find it easier to talk about their practice because there's no evidence, you see, that can be held against them after it all, to talk about their practice in a circle of critical and trusted friends, and so get used to thinking out aloud and having others in the group questioning and critiquing what they are saying in safe and supportive ways as opposed to harsh critical ways. And certainly with novice and nervous researchers of the kind I think you're referring to, because I recognize that kind of thing, Caroline, I find that very, very supportive. Then it is a question of merely saying to them, all right, now you've expressed that very, very well. Now let's all write it down. And that's the again, breaching the wall, as it were, this huge colossus of how do I write, as though there is some very specific way that things have to be written. And that formulation of own message, of own thought, of own voice, I think is critical to this process. Thank you.
I just have to comment on the earlier speaker's issue around the traditional apprenticeship model or the one-to-one. In relation to my own experience of working in a cohort model of supervision, and also through my writing around the more hybrid models that complement the traditional one-to-one, I think in a cohort model of supervision where there are more than just one supervisor working with a group of students, I think the whole notion of supervision changes because it's just not the student learning but also the supervisor learning. And I think that is what really pushes what we want to understand by research, because I think in terms of the PhD, we want to push knowledge boundaries, theoretically, methodologically. And I think in a cohort model, that intellectual journey happens for both supervisor and student. And through my research with other institutions that are working with some very interesting models here in South Africa, there is one particular institution where the lecturer is working with a hybrid model, where there is one-to-one supervision complemented by cohort supervision and then complemented by another model where the students are expected to create their own networks of learning.
Absolutely.
Through conferencing and working with disciplinary experts in the field. And that's proving to be really, really powerful in the kinds of PhD that's being produced in the discipline as well as in research, education research generally. So I think, supervision and the kinds of models that people are now exploring in a group seem to be really challenging us in terms of what we want to do here in South Africa, especially around promoting the kinds of research that we want
post-1994. Can you tell us who you are, please?
I'm
Desi, from
the Faculty of Education, UKZN. Sorry.
Any more comments from any of the other centers? Cape Town, Port Elizabeth?
Excuse me, Denise Schengel, I'm from the Botany Department and Research Capacity Development. I was wondering, this notion of self-study, I'm originally from the sciences, so that's basically how we do our M&Ds anyway. So, in effect, I'm a bit confused as to if I'm thinking of it in what my experience is versus maybe where you're coming from, because it sounds like most of you are more from humanities than from a science background. But also in my experience, both in the U.S. and I studied at UCT, is in the U.S., yes, we have a committee system, which generally you have a primary super. It sounds sort of like the mixed model that you've just discussed now, where you have your primary supervisor, and then you invite people that complement what you're doing as part of your committee to help supervise you. And also in both cases at UCT and when I was in the U.S., we would have, usually it was a unit, whether it was a formal or informal collection of your supervisors and their students, and bringing in that meeting type thing with both supervisors and students, sort of that mentoring model. So those things, at least in the sciences, from what my experience, we tend to do that, but it is a very informal setup. So I'm just wondering if that's how if I'm thinking about it in the same way that you are.
Liz, you wanted to respond to
that? Sorry, it's not a response. I was just wondering, sorry, it's a catch a name, or I've got a terrible memory.
No, that's fine. Denise Schale.
Thanks, Denise. I was just wondering that possibly we're talking about self-study in two different ways, as self study in the way you do it in Boston? Are you thinking of it as more autonomous study by the student, or the student studying their own practice?
Yeah, I'm confused because I'm coming at it in my thought of how we do it as opposed to I think what you're mentioning
talking about is the methodology.
Yeah.
Okay, let Kathleen clarify.
Yeah, I think the use of the term self-study is often very confusing and does lead to, because people come to it with their own understandings and own backgrounds. But what we are particularly talking about is self-study of higher education practice. So all our students are higher education practitioners or educators, and they're all studying their own practice, whether it's jewelry design education, drama education, maths education, and so on, in order to see how they can improve it. That's the focus of all their studies across disciplines. So that's the kind of self-study we're talking about, as opposed to perhaps the idea of self-study as somebody studying autonomously. Yeah.
Independently, okay. I've got verification, I think.
Okay. But it's, you know, something we could have another discussion sometime for several hours, perhaps, about this kind of self-study and practice and what it involves, because it's difficult to convey it just in a few minutes.
I did hear a useful term from language practice yesterday, is that they talk about practice searches.
Okay.
So a researcher into my own practice is a practice searcher. So I think that was quite a nice way of talking about it.
And Jack Whitehead calls it practitioner research. So there's a listserv, a JISC listserv, that is the practitioner researcher listserv, in which all of these things are discussed from various perspectives. So that's also useful language to learn.
Pretoria, any other question from Pretoria or comment?
Yes, it's 7 Kondo from Pretoria. I just want to comment from the side of students. I'm a student, I'm a PhD student, so I find it very difficult or frustrating that you find a supervisor having about 10 master students and then also other PhD students. So at the end of the day, you find that you don't complete in a record time, and then in an institution like HSRC, you find that, I mean, you are under pressure, you have to complete, I mean, you have to complete before your contract comes to an end. So I think it's, to us as students, it's very, very much frustrating that supervisors, they take long to look at our papers or to approve our dissertation.
I think you're not alone. I think we're all frustrated by the increased workload and trying to. But I don't think, unfortunately, I don't think that's going to go away. I think it's only going to get worse. So what we're trying to do is find creative, innovative ways to give the students the kind of support we would like you to have. I don't think there are any supervisors who don't want to give you that support, but we have to find new ways of giving you that support in order for you to achieve what you want to achieve. But we do understand and we feel your pain.
Are you having fun?
I'm looking for any remaining hands in Port Elizabeth, Cape Town, or Pretoria, or Durban.
Can I ask you a question? I'm Norman Kemp from Port Elizabeth. What is the way forward for us who want to learn more about this and discover what to do?
In terms of self-study or supervision or both?
I think in terms of the self-study as well as the supervision.
I think At NNMU, you have some experts in self-study. There is Nadine de Lange, who has supervised several self-studies. Also, Leslie Wood, who's very much involved in the self-study community. So I would suggest...
And Jean McNiff, who visits regularly.
Yeah, Jean McNiff comes regularly as well, and I'd suggest making some connections with them. But also, certainly, I think we are here today because we want to make connections with you.
And Jack's website.
Yeah, there's... What I would suggest, you've got my email address. Please email me. We can send you a list of websites and so on. But also, perhaps we can make plans to get together, have a video conference discussion.
Bill Holderness. Bill Holderness.
Okay.
Bill, also at NMMU is Professor Bill Holderness in the Faculty of Education. You might know him.
Yes,
he's very active in self-study.
But yeah, please do contact us, and we can definitely take it forward. And we will be there for the health task conference in November.
Okay.
And we're doing a panel.
Yes, we'll be doing a couple of panels on these kinds of things.
And a workshop.
Yeah, and a workshop, yeah.
There's a panel discussion on self-study and a workshop on self-study at Health Task of 2011.
And
at any movie.
At any movie.
It looks like there are no more hands anywhere in the background there, in Pretoria.
Can I just follow up on one thing? It's my experience that many students at the postgraduate level find their journeys extremely lonely. And in a sense, one could imagine that self-study is an even lonelier road, because you're focusing on yourself as your sort of subject of research. But I find that precisely because of this loneliness syndrome, if I can call it that, that sometimes I feel as though students want individual attention from me, almost as a kind of an emotional crutch. And I'm very happy to help as much as I can, but you have to draw the line somewhere. Have you found, because I certainly found it with working in teams, that a large part of what assists the supervisor is that the students can get that kind of, can I call it, emotional support from others in the group, so that they're
absolutely
not so totally focused on you as the provider, not only of the academic guidance, of the writing and grammar and everything else guidance, but also that emotional side.
Yeah, Carolyn, absolutely. That is the experience that I have had working with groups of students where, as you say, as I said earlier, they coined the term themselves or picked it up from literature, a circle of critical and trusted friends, and they do depend on each other emotionally for that support. They celebrate their successes and breakthroughs together and for each other, and then they sympathize and empathize with the tough times, and that really does take the pressure off me as supervisor, and I'm very, very aware of it and very grateful for it.
Yeah, I think that's probably a common experience that we share, is that students then provide each other with all kinds of support, very important emotional support, but also academic support. They find readings for each other,
yes,
they share new methods that they've learned about. Often in the total absence of the supervisor, you'll just hear about it from them, and that's, it's really exciting and part of the kind of academic sort of voice, I suppose, that we're trying to encourage. We want them to be independent learners and not to depend on us for everything. So if they can help each other in that way, then that's fantastic.
That seems to bring us to the end of the seminar. We we want to thank the HSRC for providing us as universities this forum to talk to each other. Thank you, HSRC. And we hope that we will continue these conversations across all our campuses from now onwards, because the pressure is on to produce more PhDs and more PhDs. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.